You are listening to the Regent College Podcast.
Hello, I'm Nick Corbin.
And I'm Claire Perini.
And welcome back to the Regent College Podcast.
Friends, today we welcome back someone who's been on the podcast before, Dr. Claudia Rosetto, who is originally from Bolivia, where she was working with Food for the Hungry. And she's also a Regent grad and has her DMin from Carey Theological College. And we were talking with her a little bit about loneliness and social isolation, which we talked with her about a few years ago. And she was doing all of that research before COVID, and then also that just became heightened during COVID, and so we talked with her a little bit more about that then. The work she's doing now with Baptist Housing Ministries has kind of expanded her thinking and interest in the way social isolation and loneliness kind of plays out for folks who are in aged care and as we age and all of those things. So we had a really interesting kind of vibrant conversation with her about those issues, as well as what does the church need to do about that? What can the church do? What does it mean? How do we understand the difference between loneliness and solitude as part of a practice? And does Jesus get lonely?
It's a great question, Claire. Does Jesus get lonely? And Claudia addressed that, as well as a few other biblical questions on how we're to understand loneliness in light of who God is and who we are and our relationship with Him and one another. And really, Claudia helped us relieve the stigma sometimes that comes around loneliness. So it was a great conversation. It was eye-opening. And it was a wonderful conversation.
So we hope you enjoy our conversation with Dr. Claudia Rosetto.
Claudia, welcome back to the Regent Podcast. It's so good to have you back.
Thank you, Claire and Nick. Very fun to be back.
Now, so we did talk with you a little while ago, but for people maybe who haven't heard that, and just tell us a little bit about you, about your journey, and maybe how you became interested in this topic of loneliness and social isolation. You were joking before how you get paid now just to talk about loneliness and social isolation, but how did you become interested in that? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So this was, I think, when did I do my DMin? I think in 2010 or 12 maybe. I was finishing my DMin at Carey, and it was on evangelism. And so I thought that evangelism is not something you talk about, but that you practice, and you have to, and the gospel speaks directly to issues that matter to humans. And so I decided to research and find out what are Vancouverites the most worried about. And to my surprise, it wasn't homelessness or poverty, but a growing sense of social isolation.
Wow.
And so that's how I got in touch with the Vancouver Foundation and their 2012 Connect and Engage report. And so then my question was, how does the gospel speak to this? So this was all in the midst of a church community that is heavily involved in social justice. And so it was trying to weave the concept of evangelism and our call to evangelism in the midst of a social justice oriented church. And how do we respond in that to this reality of the pain and this hunger for meaningful connections? So that was what started me. And then as I learned more on the research, I felt that my learning put language to my own experience. Back in 2012, I had already finished Regent, but then I started remembering some of my own experiences of loneliness and what I did about that and how it felt. And yeah, so it it started with a degree that then helped me put language to my own experience, and then I became a sort of champion of promoting talking about it, because back in 2012 a few years after, social isolation was highly stigmatized because of a culture that values independence. To be lonely is to be needy. or to disclose feelings of loneliness is to come across maybe as needy, and nobody wants to be needy, so you just don't talk about it. And and especially at church, where if you have Jesus and you still feel lonely, then there's really no hope for you, because if you tell me that you're going to church and you're doing all this sort of spiritual practices that Christians do and you still feel lonely, so then I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah.
There must be something really wrong with you, because you are beyond hope.
Yeah.
And so it's been how many years now? Almost 10 years of journey, more intentionally with this topic personally and in my work and faith environments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
Claudia, in your research and just kind of from what you've delved into, can you give like maybe a definition of social isolation? Because for some people it may be obvious, but for others it's like, what does that actually mean? Like, especially for people maybe who have different personalities, or whether they're introverted or extroverted, it's like, well, for one person this might be social isolation, but for another person it might be bliss. I don't know. Yeah, do you have thoughts on defining it?
Of course. Yeah, I think I'm very grateful now that all the research because of COVID has become more specific with all these definitions, and it's given us permission to speak more freely and more accurately about social isolation and loneliness. So they've been used in very exchangeably, but they're not the same. So social isolation is an objective reality of someone having few or no contact with others. So it's a visual, an objective situation. And then loneliness is a more subjective reality. It is the mismatch between the quantity and quality of social relationships that a person has compared to what the person wants. So it's that gap between the connections you currently have and the quality and the quantity of the connections you have versus what you would really want. Mm-hmm. So that's what creates that gap, is what creates the social pain.
Right.
And so social isolation is objective reality, and loneliness is subjective reality. And so it is community and belonging, right? Mm-hmm. So community is a more objective reality of people living in the same place or having similar characteristics in common. It can be your workplace, your church, your neighborhood, your own family unit. So that's your community, and that's very objective. People can see you are in a community. But the matter of belonging is another story, right? You can, the belonging is that feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, goals. It's something that's meaningful to you, that makes you feel valued and seen. So, that's important to clarify the language, right? Because one thing is social isolation, objective, loneliness, subjective, community, objective, and belonging, subjective.
Right.
And
That's really helpful, actually, hearing that. And both the community and belonging part as well, kind of, because otherwise, we sort of throw it all in as if like they're all sort of, community is the answer to loneliness, and it's like, well, not necessarily.
That's right.
Yeah, but belonging is the sort of the pair maybe more with loneliness, you know, versus sort of just we just need to be in community, and I think that's sort of what you're saying as well, Claudia, at the beginning. Like, if I'm in a church, and if I'm a Christian, then sure, and I'm part of a community, then therefore, why would I feel lonely? And who is that? Who's that a reflection of? Is it a reflection of me? Is it a reflection of the people I'm in community with? You know, like
all the above would be my answer, Chloe.
Right? Yeah, totally.
All the above. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. It's both subjective and objective. Like it's the combination of totally.
One of the things I heard, Claudia, during kind of maybe the peak of COVID here in North America, is that we're not socially distanced, but we're physically distanced. So we're not socially isolated, but we're physically isolated. Do you have, I guess, thoughts on that? I mean, does that, my question, I guess, is, does that where belonging maybe plays into, that you can be physically isolated or distanced, but if you are belonging to a group of people, there is an element to where you have that, still have that social aspect. Mm-hmm. But obviously, I don't know. Obviously, you still need that physical contact.
Like, how does proximity, physical proximity, play into those, both of those things?
Yeah.
I think at the beginning of the pandemic, I think I used to, I was reading about this physical distancing while having social cohesion. And faith communities were more intentional around that. Yes, we're physically distant. We're choosing to abide with the public health regulation. So we'll figure out an upper Zoom instead of an upper room. The upper Zoom.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I didn't create it. That's the Lectio 365 of today. That comes so handy. But, so the faith communities were more intentional about how to navigate that physical distancing. Mm-hmm. And then there's also this matter of within that social cohesion, there's this behavioral synchrony, which means that when you do something together, even though you might be apart, there's that sense of belonging. Right. Uh-huh. I don't know how was your experience of if you were able to handle Zoom after Zoom church or home group, even though you may turn off your screen, but even just knowing that other people were doing the same thing with you, that behavioral synchrony, that does give you a sense of belonging, even though you're not in the presence of each other. Mm-hmm. But at some point within the pandemic, in different degrees, of course, you longed for that embodiment, for that incarnational presence, right? That you realize, we've done Zoom for a year. It's not the same. Mm-hmm. It was an emergency, help, but it's not cutting in it for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel a bit like strangely affirmed by the fact that the pandemic just brought to light all the things you'd been thinking out before the pandemic? You're like, I've been talking about this whole social isolation loneliness thing for like years, and now all of a sudden.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the pandemic has brought like heart-wrenching loss, but it has given us permission to be public about our loneliness. And there's great benefit in that, ideally, right? Because one of the ways to address any stigmatization on any situation is to talk about it. And now people want to talk about it, and they are willing to be honest and detail on their own experience. And so that's one thing that the pandemic has brought us, that given us permission to be transparent and in our feelings.
And with that comes
research, right? Because now more people are talking about it. So then researchers are paying more attention. Then medical groups are paying more attention. So now there's this collaboration between different fields to see how we can address this in a multidisciplinary way, because that's the only way. Right. There's no pill, right? There's no one silver bullet. So there has to be some kind of a collaboration, which is now happening. So now there's a world coalition to address social isolation. So there are many networks now, and there's now a point to just figuring out how to use the same language and have similar indicators in order to compare data. So that's where now things are becoming more realistic.
In research.
And I mean, with that research, I have just read recently that, the lethalness of social isolation and loneliness, that it can be worse than smoking or obesity. Like, it has many health ramifications. I would assume from the research, but from your perspective and from what you've done, is that accurate?
Absolutely. Dr. John Cacioppo is the one who put a number. He said that you can, let me check here. I think it was air pollution creates your odds for a sooner death by 5%, and then obesity by 20%, and living with drinking 30%. But social isolation increases your odds for an early death by 45%. Mm-hmm. And the way I've seen it is, the problem is that this is a catch 22. What is it, 21?
Catch 22. Yeah, that's
you
it.
You got 22. 22.
I don't know what it means. I don't know where it comes from, but it's 22.
Catch 22. You got it.
Following the year, catch 23. The problem is that we are, like Dr. John Cacioppo puts it very well. He says we are social animals. So when we are isolated, our brain automatically goes into this alertness that we are in danger. So then we become more suspicious of others. We become more cautious, overly cautious. It's just when you remove a little wolf from the pack, And then the world becomes very suspicious of any person who wants to help you. You may want to be wanting to help or feed the wolf, but then the wolf gets anxious and starts showing the teeth. And so when we go into this moment of isolation, sometimes we do not know it, but unconsciously we go into alert self-preservation mode. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's trying to help you, you might see it as a threat. And then that makes you even more difficult to socialize.
Right.
If you notice that somebody, you make a phone call, for example, and they say, "Why are you calling me? This is the second time you call me." And you're trying to be kind and caring, but then the person perceives that as an intrusion. Mm. And Eduardo Galeano, a Paraguayan cultural commentator, says, we live in this tragic world where we see our neighbor as a threat and never as a promise. So COVID has made that even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Now during COVID times, your neighbor was literally a threat for the potentiality of the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're a more difficult person to socialize with, then you are more alone more often. Mm-hmm. And the pain of loneliness is very real. And that might lead you to substance abuse. Right. And then unhealthy eating, for example, in the case of seniors, you might see a social worker coming to see a senior who lives by themselves. And often they find food that is frozen food. There is no drive to eat well. And so the social isolation creates so many pains of different kinds in people. And one way to cope with pain is to do something about it, maybe eat more or drink something or abuse of substance abuse. Just in Japan, I don't know how long ago, they found that lonely seniors were mostly shoplifters. So they first of all, they couldn't afford the food. Second, then after that, the fact that they would be taken to some retention place would give them food and companionship. So then all this loneliness creates this unhealthy habits to cope with the pain, because loneliness is a pain that is not like hunger that you can go to the refrigerator and open it. And loneliness is something that you experience, and sometimes you're not sure what is it that's happening within you, right? And it takes some knowledge and some education about loneliness nowadays to say, yeah, that's it, I'm lonely. So now what am I going to do about it? Sometimes we're not able to understand that that's the loneliness that's driving us to some of these unhealthy practices that eventually will increase your odds for an early death. And there's a report of, it's called, this age is called the decade of healthy aging. And there's an actual, you can Google it. It's a very good brief that has come out with lots of details. But they actually have specific chart on how social isolation and loneliness connects to mortality. So from health conditions to leading to creating the possibility, higher possibility of strokes, diabetes, depression, anxiety, then even your cognitive decline. Just, I don't know if you had grandparents around, but if you happen to be to have grandparents who live in long-term care facilities who also lived with dementia, their cognitive decline was horrendous. It was horrendous. And then eventually that leads to death. The same with your capabilities. If you are a senior, for example, or a person with a disability that relies on physio to get better and to socialize, then you get worse if you do not have adequate social and meaningful interactions. And so there is,
I'm just curious, Claudia, have you seen any research done in these these areas, these places that where people live into their hundreds? Like, it's just so common. And obviously there's a lot of variables and factors going in there, like diet probably and stuff. But have you found any research in correlation with their the culture and how they understand, like how they socialize, and then also maybe their infrastructure? I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I did hear briefly about, especially in the Japanese culture, just recently, that in the past, the cultural norm was that younger married people or younger people would take care of the elders in Japan. And now, because of the fast pace of life and the cost of living, now both sets of children have to work, husband and wife, or either. Mm. So now that the person who's older is finds themselves alone. Now, Japan is a culture that's very much fit and more conscious of diet. Mm-hmm. So many seniors tend to live longer, which is a blessing if you have the right support systems and the resources. Mm-hmm. But it can feel like a curse if you do not have the social supports and the resources. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is some correlation of people living longer and how that affects and how that's produced, because they have the adequate social supports, mm-hmm. and resources, and how that plays out into their own feelings of loneliness, because now they're living longer, which means no more peers, right? Their brothers, their siblings, their friends, they're dying. They died long ago, and now they find themselves alone without much meaningful interaction. And if you if you couple that with societies that do not have adequate resources to support aging, our global aging, now we're in this world of global aging. So then that equation just leads to social isolation, and of course to overstretching the medical system, because one thing that the pandemic has shown us is how loneliness and social isolation, when treated proactively, they can prevent our healthcare system to be overstretched, because now we have people with mental health challenges because of their loneliness now calling and showing up in emergency rooms. So I think that because, and this started mostly in the UK, that they were able to put numbers, like to have some economic expression of the effects of social isolation and loneliness on the healthcare system. Now, because there's a number and there's a financial impact, now we can say, okay, maybe instead of creating more beds in a hospital for seniors or teenagers with mental health issues, maybe we can invest those resources in youth support workers or more churches or more community conducive living situations and education in school and the integration of spirituality. And asking doctors to screen you for loneliness, whether you are 40 or whether you are 18 or whether you are 90. How are you feeling? Are you alone? You know, so
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the difference between loneliness and solitude. Is it a matter of agency and kind of like I'm choosing this versus it's being done to me? What are your thoughts on that?
I love that question, Claire. And we are in Lent.
Right.
Which is often we talk about Jesus and being led by the Spirit to the wilderness.
Right.
Was that a chosen or was that an imposed loneliness? And how did that turn into solitude? So I think that our Christian narrative has so much to offer for us in terms of language and possibility when we're facing loneliness and social isolation, of course. But I would say that when we understand who God is, and we understand that God is a triune God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So he has created us for community. We thrive in community and we language alone. So when you're feeling alone, there's nothing really wrong with you, right? It means that you are just becoming aware of how much you need the other. And that might be, first of all, God, and then your neighbor. So our Christian tradition tells us that when you feel alone, there's nothing wrong with you, because first of all, your whole life is a reflection of a communal God. Mm-hmm. And when you are not in community meaningfully, in a meaningful union with God and others, then something doesn't work quite well. Mm-hmm. And your brain knows it. And then you go into some over alert mode and things go wrong from there. And so then that's how in our Christian faith, we understand that Jesus himself came to live that out on earth, right? Mm-hmm. So we see Jesus going into the desert. And how did he live his alone time in the desert? I don't know. But we also see a Jesus who purposely was choosing to run away from multitudes, right? Because when you feel crowded, there's not much room for meaningful interactions, right? And so what does that tell us about when is the time to aim for for solitude, which maybe started by loneliness, because now we live in a world that is so fast paced that we're constantly going through transitions, and transitions normally push you to loneliness because your energy, you're running low of energy in order to process transition. So you don't have much energy to socialize. So now you find yourself alone. When you have a Christian tradition and ideally a meaningful faith community, then at least after COVID, you can say, I'm feeling alone. I'm not sure what this is about, but I'm feeling alone. And ideally, if you have a faith community that has been a little bit more educated about loneliness, then instead of questioning your spiritual practices, have you gone to this home group, or are you reading scripture, which is true. I mean, there's a benefit of spiritual practices, because ideally, especially during Lent, they bring you back to God. I mean, I think Lent is that one season where we're purposefully more intentional about going back to our union with God. I was just reading, do you remember that the two angels on the Ark of the Covenant, how they're facing each other, how they're hugging each other? I was reading this rabbi talking about those two angels, meaning that when you have a problem about the world, about yourself, don't turn to other people, turn to me. That's what those two angels mean. And there's this sense of embrace, and there's nothing in between us, right? So Lent, for example, and all the spiritual disciplines are allowing us to say, okay, God, what is in between us? What is in between us right now? Is it maybe it can be my own mental health, my loneliness, my pursuit of power, honor, the esteem of others? Like, what is in between us that I need to be purposeful about reconnecting with you and loving you and embracing you alone? So that's sort of the ideal journey, right? And I don't know if I'm talking too much. You can tell me if I'm diverting too far from the question.
It's really helpful. Mm-hmm. It's really good. One of the things you said was Jesus' connection with his Father, and then when he went alone. So I'm just wondering, did Jesus experience loneliness?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the moment on the cross, Dr. John Swinton talks about, in the context of dementia, that the worst thing about life is being forgotten. And being forgotten is hell. And Jesus on the cross cries out, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani? Why have you forgotten me? So for me, Jesus on the cross is fully experiencing the hell of loneliness and abandonment and being forgotten and feeling forgotten. And so we can be there with him. And also, when you do have a faith community, like three disciples that go with you to Gethsemane to supposedly support you through a big transition, and they fall asleep. And you are like, okay, guys, this is the one time that I really needed you guys to be with me, and now you're not. So even how to handle abandonment within your faith community, when people, when there's this concept called of, I think it's social, collective loneliness, right? Where you are in the company of others, but you don't feel valued or seen. And this can be part of your marriage experience, or your church experience, or your family experience. Yeah, there's something really at the same time that there's nothing wrong with us feeling alone. Also something that's really broken within us, that the fall has broken, right? So there's that tension between, yes, I'm validating my loneliness because I'm an expression of a triune God, but at the same time, there's something within me that needs to switch. Brené Brown says, if you don't look for signs in your group that you don't belong, because you're going to find them. Right. Yeah. Sometimes we're part of a group, whatever that group may be. And you sometimes the back of your head, you think, well, I don't belong in here. And you start watching, and this is why I don't belong. And then you see how people don't talk to you, or where they sit, or whatever. And then you confirm, yeah, I don't belong. So I agree with Renee. She says, stop looking for signs that you don't belong, because you're going to find them. So there's that something broken within us, right? That you seem to be looking for signs you don't belong,
Right.
When maybe from the perspective of the group or your partner or your family, they love you. And we have to know how to hold that tension of, yes, there's nothing wrong with my loneliness and how I feel, but at the same time, maybe I need repentance.
Mm.
And Lent is one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you're going through mental health challenges, even then Lent can be a good season
mm-hmm.
on how to validate how you're feeling alone or whatever, and then mm-hmm. pointing that towards God rather than away from Him in that mm-hmm. embrace of the tabernacle and the,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
mm-hmm.
that embrace, you know, nothing in between us.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only social fulfillment. And at the same time, our loneliness also points us to our need of heaven. We're mm-hmm. not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes
fully, anyways.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it makes me wonder sort of as well, where does so the fact that, you know, in Christ and by the Spirit, God is with us. So mm-hmm. in that sense, we are never alone, you know, mm-hmm. in that sense. And yet, so how, mm-hmm. like, I guess maybe it's that tension that you're talking about. It's like there is, you are mm-hmm. never alone and yet you feel alone. And is that the brokenness or is that... Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
is it just deeply
that's
human?
What I call that's yeah. what I call sin.
Yeah.
And I don't right. and I want to be very careful about it because it's not sin right. to make you feel guilty about it.
Right.
But yeah. because it's that state
yeah.
between right. what it needs, what is what ought to be and mm-hmm. is not, what mm-hmm. it was created to be and it's not yet. So that right. here and not yet, you know, uh-huh. concept that region holds that very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that even antisocial predisposition within us towards God first,
mm-hmm.
right?
And right.
then towards ourselves, and there's so many layers to our loneliness.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And so, and also to our social isolation, of course, the structural, yeah.
mm-hmm.
more structurally, right? There's this individual and the structural causes that I think I talked about in the first part mm-hmm. of this podcast a few years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes me wonder too, like, and maybe it's always both, isn't it? But it's a sort of like, at what point does the person need to say, I feel lonely? So so therefore I'm going to do something about it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, at what point do we then embrace the loneliness as mm-hmm. the opportunity to say, I am in need of the presence and accompaniment mm-hmm. of the Spirit and the accompaniment, you know, like how much is it like it depends on me, I need to do something about it, how much mm-hmm. is it, I don't know that,
yeah,
I don't know,
how do we
think?
Hold that tension,
yeah.
how do we
yeah.
hold that tension,
yeah.
yeah, I think I would talk about context,
right
how old are you first, if you
right.
are in your 80s and 90s and
right.
this experience is more common than not, so
mm-hmm.
then maybe there's something to pay attention about, and do you have support systems, maybe
yeah.
maybe you are on this spectrum where your loneliness and the frequency of it is so common that maybe
mm-hmm.
we really need to really look at more structural situations
right.
in your context. Tell me more about your context. Are you in your, I don't know, 40s, part of a family unit? And what's your role there?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that structural aspect. And also there's that inner aspect. Are you right now in a place of desolation or consolation in
mm-hmm.
your life right now? What season of your life are you
mm-hmm.
in?
Mm-hmm.
And also the layer of your personality.
Yeah.
Sometimes we look for people in a sort of compulsive way because
yeah.
we don't know what to do when we're alone.
Right.
So I hear your question. Maybe the Spirit is calling you to the desert and say, come, let's
right.
come with me
mm-hmm.
and she'll be just with me.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we navigate those moments of when it's time to call, pick up the phone, or in
right.
this case, send a text
mm-hmm.
to pick up the phone, time is passing by, and say, can you talk with me? I need somebody to talk to. And,
yeah.
And when that, when the response that you're hoping doesn't happen, then what?
Mm-hmm.
Right. How long do I keep?
Right.
How long do I keep reaching out? And
mm-hmm.
so there's a moment where your social sustenance depends on God.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot where I spoke about it. I don't know if I repeated my if I'm repeating
no.
myself, but
yeah.
Doing my work, I noticed some of my residents during the thick of COVID. How at some point I realized, God, at the end of the day, just how we pray, give us our daily bread. And in Jesus' sort of context, the daily bread wasn't a given. So that's mm-hmm. partly why you ask, right? It's a, it was mm-hmm. a community of poor people, and how now loneliness has become the poverty of many parts of the world. Mm-hmm. Then we say, we think of God as the sole provider of our social sustenance. There's a point where you're so helpless in your loneliness for different reasons, because of your age, your mental health situation, your physical situation, many factors of your context. But there's a point where sometimes we feel so helpless mm-hmm. in our loneliness that all we can do is say, Jesus, I really need you. Please help me with my social sustenance. Mm-hmm. And you feel mm-hmm. you've done, you've checked all the things. I phoned somebody. I talked to my sister. I mm-hmm. sometimes there's, they call you back and still doesn't make a difference either. So there's this, yeah, this part yeah. where you reach out, they reach back to you and they, and you feel, well, that didn't cut it either. So, mm-hmm. so there's something really within, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so being aware of our own compulsions,
yeah,
of our context, of the season of our lives. So looking at your context is, I mm-hmm. think, an important part of where to start. Where to
yeah,
start.
It's really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to chat more about context, specifically in the work that you're doing right now and serving in elderly care. But before, I wonder if you might share personally a little bit, and maybe you did this in the last episode. But I wonder if you could, share, what your experience, you're from Bolivia. Is that right?
Bolivia. Yeah. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you could share what your experience was like, living in Bolivia and then in moving to Vancouver, socially mm-hmm. for you.
Yeah. It was unbelievable, Nick. I have to use my, because I'm from Bolivia, it's unbelievable. It was an unbelievable experience. Yeah, so throughout my research, I realized the moments of loneliness in my life. So I don't mind sharing a little briefly. So in Bolivia, I came from a very nuclear family. My mom, my grandmother, my sister, and I. And despite common assumptions that because I'm from a Latin country that I grew up with extended family or dropping by at neighbors' homes, that was not the truth. Mm. I lived in a city. Rarely, if ever, we would drop by into people's homes at all. Mm. And I'm an extroverted person. So I did have my community through my church. That's where community happened. I didn't mm-hmm. have to look for it. And that's mm-hmm. the difference once I moved to Canada. Right. I didn't have to make friends in Bolivia. I was in school mm-hmm. in Bolivia. I had a church in Bolivia. And yeah, so then I came to Regent. And my Regent experience, thank God for a while, was paired with soccer. Mm-hmm. And so that those were my sort of glorious years where I had studying and as I was telling my spiritual director recently, I had a very good friend who would pull me to soccer. Sometimes I feel that playtime is a waste of time, so I don't play so much. But she would almost drag me to soccer. She loved me and I loved her back. So that's when it's through the sports that I felt I was connected. And but what was difficult for me was the feeling of loneliness in my church. I did attend a very community-oriented church and with wonderful people, saints in my mind. And I remember this one Sunday looking at the back of the heads of my fellow congregants and saying, how come I don't feel connected to these people? We share so much in common. And I even lived a few blocks from my church because they were into intentional and living together and community homes and all that. So I did live in a community home as well, in a community house with seven other people. And yet I didn't feel like connected in my church. And the hardest part was the after the service where you shake hands and you go to tea time and yet you're still talking about the weather and the weekend, even though you've been attending the same church for so long. So that's when my research, I realized that that was the pain. I couldn't handle the after the service conversations. I remember just dashing to my house and thinking, how irrational is this? I know these people, they know me, they're wonderful people, and yet I can't handle weather and weekend conversations. Partly because of my culture, the weather and the week and your weekend didn't matter much at all. Mm-hmm. Now it matters to me. Now I'm happy talking about the weather and the weekend. And that's what I ask people about. So eventually you assimilate, quote unquote. But back then it was so painful, and maybe a sign that I hadn't yet gotten to the place where we can talk about more personal things.
Yeah.
And so then at one point, I think partly what helped was an invitation and also a little bit of self-agency or self-initiative. Mm-hmm. So when that very Sunday, somebody invited me to be part of leadership, to be part of council. And I took that as that answer to prayer, that social mm-hmm. sustenance that comes direct from God. I was mm-hmm. in that place of, there's nothing else I can do. This church is community oriented. I live close by the church. They're wonderful people. And yet still, I don't feel connected, mm-hmm. or I don't feel I belong. So that's when that hand from heaven came and said, do you want to be part of council? And so I accepted and became part of council and church. And then at the same time, I still found the Sunday experience very difficult mm-hmm. afterwards. And so there was our female pastor was leaving for to do quote unquote missionary work in Burma. So then I felt, okay, I don't feel I'm getting community. I'm going to try to make it happen for others. So mm-hmm. I took leadership mm-hmm. of the home group, and I feel that's where community started happening for me mm-hmm. when I was more, not so much in a victim posture, but mm-hmm. more in this is what I have to give mm-hmm. posture. And that was one of the most commonly quoted reasons in the Vancouver Foundation research of why people don't engage in community activities was because they felt they had little to offer. Mm-hmm. So, and that's where the sort of Christian narrative that Cole talks to you about, what is your sense of calling? What are the gifts that God has given you, can enable you, empower you to get out of that sense of victim mentality, because I'm alone and I can't do anything about it, which happens because mm-hmm. being alone is so debilitating,
right?
That you do find yourself, there's nothing else I can do or that I want to do or that mm-hmm. I have the energy to do. This is so painful. This is so difficult. So that's mm-hmm. those moments is that you see God's providence providing that social sustenance for you, and at the same time the Spirit enabling you to say, okay, remember, I've given you all these gifts that maybe if manifested can help you create meaningful connections.
We hope you've been enjoying this wonderful conversation, but Claire wanted to take a few seconds just to share some ways you could get involved more in the Regent College podcast.
Totally. We at Regent, we love people being a part of the things that we're doing. And so there's a couple of different ways you can do that. If you've enjoyed this conversation or any of our other conversations, let someone know. Share it with them, share it with a family member, with a friend, with someone who you think would appreciate this and would love to hear it. That's the first way. Mm-hmm. Second way, you could give us a rating or write a little comment on wherever you listen to your podcast. That would be another great way. And then the final way that you could participate with us is if you've enjoyed the podcast and you'd like to give a donation to Regent College, then we would warmly receive that. Yes. You can do that by heading to rgnt.net/give. And, you know, in the comment box, let them know that we sent you. Right, Nick?
That's right.
We do love hearing when people have appreciated the podcast. And so you can let Nick know by sending an email to podcast@regent-college.edu. When Nick and I are having these conversations, it's sometimes hard for us to realize that actually people listen to these. And so when we get emails or we get a little note in the comment box on the donation page of our website, it just reminds us that people are actually listening, and we love that. So please let us know that you're listening. Let us know if there are things that different profs that you'd like to hear from. We'd love to hear from you.
So thanks for listening. And we hope you enjoy the rest of the conversation.
Claudia, I wonder if you're in your work with aged care, and we're sort of talking about context and at what point in the season in your life, you've talked a little bit about this, but how do you sort of get this sense of how does spirituality fit into mm-hmm. loneliness, particularly for older folks who are perhaps more socially isolated depending on the context where they are, whether they're living at home or in community care or whatever? Mm-hmm. In what ways? Talk to us a little bit about mm-hmm. that.
You just asked my dream question, Claire.
There you go.
Let me right here. Yeah. So, spirituality and meaningful aging. That's my thing nowadays.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Mm. Spirituality and meaningful aging. So, I'm in a interdenominational or interfaith environment. I do work for a Christian faith-based organization, but of course, I'm paid as a chaplain to care for all the journeys, spiritual journeys of our residents, whether they are aware they have one or not. So, in elder care, older people face three challenges, and it's loneliness, helplessness, and boredom. Those are the three main challenges of older adults: loneliness, helplessness, and boredom. And of course, that also is subject to your context, your support systems, or your resources, and all that. But what I find is that, and there's also I love this definition of John Swinton. Let me find it here. I actually just taught a course on this at, with a fellow resident here who did something wonderful. He's in his 80s. So John Swinton says, spirituality is how we respond to who am I, where did I come from, where am I going, and why. It is the common human quest for meaning, purpose, self-transcending knowledge, significance, love, and community, and a sense of a higher power among us. So it's a very long definition, but when we're in our older years, I do deal with people here who have had very purpose-driven Christian lives. We have been missionaries, pastors, and so I do have those as well. So I could see a little bit of a spectrum of how in your older years you react. Just recently, I was part of a funeral of a wonderful man who dedicated his whole life to the Christian service. And he became blind in independent living, and he would still listen to his audio Bible while he was waiting for chapel to start. But then he had this very real saying. He said, his name was Jack Purdy. He said, aging is not for sissies. Right? Like, it's not for sissies. You have to brace yourself. And because just as in your younger years, you're called to save, put away money for your older years, for your retirement, in younger years, we also need to build on our social capital. Because when you're older, if you were able to befriend your children's friends, then maybe your children's friends are around in the city where you are when your children are far away because they got a job somewhere else.
Right.
So then you have to be aware that as you grow older, just as you saved money enough to pay you an independent living place, you also realize the fruits of investing yourself in others. That if you were able to invest yourself in others, then chances are that when you are older, that will pay off. You will be harvesting in different ways from your inner motivation to people actually coming to visit you because you were there for them. So how does the spirituality help? It's because it helps you connect with your higher power. And if you're a Christian, that's God, right? So it helps you see the possibility that you can be open to somebody else other than you.
Right.
Especially when you are stuck, when you're stuck in loneliness, when you're stuck in boredom, when you're stuck in helplessness. Those are very upsetting feelings.
Yeah.
When you lost your mobility or your sight or you used to be independent. And I just love this one. I have two examples I have so many stories with my residents here, but I have a couple of them. One of them, for example, shared briefly that she was giving up. She was choosing to give up her driver's license. Okay. She's a very active Christian lady, and how difficult it was. Right. And she said, I want to be the one making this decision. Just like I was the one making the decision to move myself out of my home to come into an independent living situation, I want to be the one making the decision to give my driver's license. But I found it was very difficult because I was telling God, she's a very Christian lady, telling God who's going to take care of me in my mobility needs. And that day, in my devotional, I read the story of Abraham giving up Isaac and trusting God with that. So I felt that I was putting my driver's license on the altar. And then soon after that, my daughter said she will take care of all my driving needs. So that's how she navigated that important transition of losing independence. Right? Who did she consult that with? Mm-hmm. And her daughter was in there. She didn't talk to her children about it. She mm-hmm. talked she talked to God about it, and she expected mm-hmm. God to do something about it or show her some kind of direction. Mm-hmm. And she did it. And she was risking something, right? To losing the independence. That's a big thing when you're yeah. older, right? When you're yeah. younger, you are told to be and learn how to be independent. As you're growing older, you have to learn how to become comfortable with depending on others.
Yeah.
And that is very painful if you never had to depend on others, if you didn't know mm-hmm. the possibilities that the good possibilities that can happen when you choose to depend on others. Mm-hmm. Right. And then another story I love it is another resident here, speaking of spirituality, John Swinton helped create a course called the Spiritual Care Course, which is a little bit like the Alpha Course, where you have all these prepackaged videos of panels of authoritative voices in elder care, and John Swinton being one of them. And in those videos, there is 8 episodes, you talk about the different seasons of your life. So you talk about the spring of your life, the summer of your life, the winter of your life, and then the autumn and then the winter of your life, and what are some practices that are helpful to that, and how do you deal with the winter and the autumn of your life. So I was talking to this one resident here who I find is very, very driven, and he didn't know anything about the spiritual care course, and he tells me, I have produced 4 videos on the spring, summer, autumn, and winter of my life, 10-minute videos. So I was very pleasantly surprised. He's in his 80s. I was like, oh, how did you do that? So when he retired, he's a Christian too. When he retired, he signed up for the Toastmasters to learn how to tell stories well. Mm. And then to digital storytelling at Simon Fraser to know how to put together videos that tell his story. Mm, cool. So he did that. So he was so aware of the benefits of telling his story. And because in his story, Jesus is so present, it was also a way to offer his faith as part of his legacy in a way that's digestible, 10-minute videos online.
Yeah.
And now that has opened this resident to many meaningful connections because, we've been sharing that and how he has been strongly mobilized by his faith, how his faith has been able to make sense of every stage of his life, to make him aware of it and to engage in active aging. Right. There's concept of active aging and there's active grief. I mean, there's lots of active words for transitions when the invitation is to stop being a victim and engage with the process, right? Whether it's grief, whether it's aging. So our Christian tradition, the biblical narrative has such capacity to help you create meaning for all the stages of our lives.
Right.
All the way to being alone, hanging naked on a cross, right? Sometimes when you feel exposed, alone, abandoned,
yeah.
Even then you can reach out and have somebody there that knows what you're going through, meaning Jesus and our stories.
Mm-hmm.
So spirituality is fundamental to help you create meaning. Mm-hmm. In your older years, fundamental, and to help you transition through the different losses that come. Mm-hmm. And spirituality, not just you and Jesus in your corner and closed down in your room, but spirituality as able, especially in our Christian tradition, able to help you develop, maintain, and stay connected with community.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Whether it's in your senior home, whether it's God calling you to reach out across the hall to talk to a fellow older person who's maybe more alone than you. So spirituality is fundamental, especially in your older years, to develop this meaningful aging and to help you engage actively your aging and to not be afraid of death and to know how to talk about death.
Right.
Now, if you do not self-identify as a Christian, but you still have some kind of higher power that you connect to. We can still talk about those values and those reasons why you keep going, why you keep going when things are difficult.
Yeah.
So good, Claudia.
Yeah, yeah. Claudia, I wondered sort of as we sort of wrap up here, I'm wondering, and you've sort of talked about this a little bit, that we've become more comfortable talking about sort of social isolation and loneliness and things. Do you have any thoughts in particular in terms of the church and how we sort of can continue to engage this, not when it's something that we're just talking about because, you know, we've just come out of COVID, but how does the church engage in this conversation and then sort of continue to resist isolation or to kind of create kind of structures, that are not just, oh, they just join a home group or, you know, thoughts around that and how the church can engage?
Yeah. I mean, the church is so strategically located and equipped, at least from an idealistic perspective. Right? Maybe not. I don't know what is your experience of church, but lately we've been studying the exile, the Babylonian exile, as a good way to see how isolation and being removed from a familiar place and people, how does that affect your relationship to God and to each other? And how do you resist and how do you continue to be God's people despite this COVID exile? So the church, I think, has this sense of identity that is very important. So how can it engage? Oh my goodness, the possibilities are endless. Because on one hand, you love the church because of what it can be when it comes to offering cure for social isolation, and sometimes you hate the church because it hasn't yet realized all the possibilities that we have at the same time. So you're like the prophet, you love the church and you hate the church at the same time because of what is not yet and it can be. But for example, it can go from practical parts like being more accustomed to rhythms where loneliness and isolation are talked about, whether in your liturgical rhythms of the church, whether it's in your home group. How do I make room to keep talking about this, right? Because now we live in a globalized, overly technology savvy society that is even more, feels more disconnected, and that's the irony, right? So this is part of our daily life. This is not one Sunday or two Sundays. This is part of our daily life. So how does our how do our weekly, monthly rhythms make room for us to talk about our loneliness and our isolation? And how are we, for example, screening people in our churches, right? Like nowadays, doctors are invited to screen people when you go for a doctor checkup, right? They ask you, how are you feeling your social networks? You know, do you have some family or connections? Yeah. So there's that capacity to incorporate talking more about it in your church rhythms. Then there's the other part of the intentionality. And especially I learned this very tragically and very sad during COVID. I do have many unmarried friends. And during COVID, there was this concept of the bubble. Who's your bubble? And therefore, if you had a bubble and you were safe in your bubble, then you could interact and visit with each other and all that. And I had this friend who was very upset at me. And only later I realized that I had not been more intentional in naming her as part of my bubble. In my mind, I was a chaplain working with vulnerable populations, and she was working with very at-risk populations. So I didn't even articulate it that this is the reason why I'm not considering you in my bubble, even though you are so close to me. But the church needs to understand how within in our own circles of our church, we do have people who are more vulnerable to loneliness, maybe not so much social isolation, but maybe to loneliness. And how do we embrace them? How do we bring them to the embrace intentionally? Right. And this could look like unmarried people or people with a disability or whoever you think would be more at risk in your faith community, and how those who are in meaningful relationships or subgroups can be intentional about including these people. Right. And it's mutual. Right. It's mutual. It's mutual. Like, and so I watched if I were to do this, redo this sad friendship loss again, I wish she could have told me, Claudia, I'm feeling left out from your family. I thought we would be a bubble. And so then maybe when I explained to her, she didn't understand the way I understood it because of my job and my, so I wish we had more opportunity to talk more candidly and more honestly about how we felt about each other's jobs and expectations on meaningful connections with each other. So I think the church needs to become more comfortable about negotiating social conflicts and figuring out how can we stay together, whether it's because of COVID or a misunderstanding. How do we maintain this meaningful relationships, this social cohesion despite conflict or distance or whatever. And the church has all the theory about reconciliation, right? We're called to be communities of welcome and reconciliation. So if we can become more practical about that, I think it would be another thing. And ideally also, I mean, after COVID, we're wondering, what does it mean to be the church and what does it look like? I think Pope Francis said that the future of the church is a network of communities, small communities.
Right.
So I don't know how it is in your church environment, but I've been wondering, what does it mean to be the church now after COVID? And maybe how much collaboration can there be now between small communities? And what is the, and I feel honestly that we're being called to locality, to be more local. Just think of churches that were commuter churches versus those who are local churches. Both have benefits and challenges, obviously. But after COVID, I think we are realizing the benefits of being more localized. Like even here with my residents, I aim for us to raise leadership and volunteers within our community, because if we ever have to go through a lockdown, our volunteers live with us. We can still have all our different spiritual rhythms and activities running, right? This sense of sustainability and locality, that our conversations part larger in the world now after COVID. So if the church is able to practice that and collaborate with each other, I think that would be good. So talking about it more intentionally, figuring out how to navigate conflict or distance, and figuring out how to collaborate with each other. And we have all the theory, all the software, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All the software.
It's gonna like make it work. Yeah, Claudia, it's been so good to talk to you.
Yeah,
and we could, we could continue forever, but we won't.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
But thanks again
Claire
so much
for the invitation. I appreciate it. You know, I can always talk about it. So
totally, anytime. We might get you back again.
Thanks for listening to the Regent College Podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to discover more about Regent College, its upcoming events, conferences, courses, and more content like this, visit rgnt.net. That is rgnt.net.